Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're all concerned about viruses, not just the COVID-19. Mind you, there were 18 previous to that. They've never been able to develop a vaccine with any success for any of those. They never developed, even though they tried. Anthony Fauci gave enormous amounts of money to try to get a vaccine for HIV. But we have a lot of viruses, not all of them pathogenic, that we're exposed to. So wouldn't it make sense to try to find something that's natural and non-toxic and that we can voluntarily, from freedom of choice, to use our body as we choose, bring it in? Well, the Journal of General Virology, a mainstream journal, published a study from Wuhan Institute of Bioengineering that turmeric could have antiviral properties. Well, it does have antiviral properties. It's the curcumin in it, which is a natural compound found in the spice turmeric, can help eliminate certain viruses. I'll get into that in some depth. We have a lot to talk about on health and healing. But also today, I'm going to bring you up to date on the real science, citing the peer-reviewed literature, so you can document it for yourself. And it's completely contrary to everything our government is saying. Why? Why the disconnect? Well, how about because one wants to patent a new type of RNA DNA vaccine that will make hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars for the companies and the individuals, including Bill Gates, and also the drugs they want to give you. But we have inexpensive drugs that have been proven to save lives, to cure coronavirus. Hydroxy is just one of those. Why not use them? I'll get into that. And also, as a board-certified clinical nutritionist, I'm one of those people that when I sit across from someone and ask, what do you want to have happen? If they say, I want to get my cholesterol down, or I want to help my heart or my liver or whatever it is, I try to always look at what is natural, non-toxic first. Now, supporting what I choose are hundreds of thousands of peer-reviewed articles. So anybody can go to the scientific literature. That's why we always cite them. And look up for yourself. Why is it that not a single newspaper, not the New York Times, Washington Post, Boston Herald, none of those papers, none of the media has once had someone like myself on to talk about what could we do to keep our immune system strong if we're young? If we're older, if we've had compromised comorbidity conditions like obesity and diabetes and heart disease, emphysema, or if we're sick, along with some traditional therapy, what can we do to really, really put safety on our side, greater chance of recovering? Not a single interview, not a single person, nothing. And yet the scientific literature is there, something for you to consider. So today I'll be giving you the latest on the coronavirus, some interesting positive results and challenging some of the stupidity that's occurring out there. Also today, I'm going to begin a 2 days. Tomorrow I'm going to do a very comprehensive commentary that I started working on this morning, and it's about half done. And I'm going to be talking in depth about the woke culture, about the deplatforming culture, the culture that feels it has not just a right but an obligation to be almost a reincarnation of the 13th century inquisitors, those who would go in the Inquisition town to town and seek out those that were considered heretics or possessed so they could bring purity to the person. Well, that's what we have today. And I'm calling them out for their mindlessness and the degree to which they're willing, almost with a sadistic, erotic pleasure, to destroy people's reputations and lives, and are doing so by the thousands. And the mob rules today. It literally rules. And so I'm going to talk about that. But I'm going to have a couple people on today to also talk about that. So in this, after our health and nutrition part, we're going to have the cancel culture doxed me, an ex-Google leader, tech leader. It destroyed his life, completely destroyed his marriage, destroyed everything. Also, millennials, Generation Z's trying to foster a workplace culture of victimhood. Now, actually doing quality work, showing up on time, paying attention, no, that's not in their agenda. Being able to exploit each situation for their own advantage, that is. Also, canceling the cancel culture, the rise and fall of the woke generation. Well, they're on the rise, and they'll continue to rise as long as conscious, wise men and women do nothing and say nothing, then they win, and you won't like what that's going to do to you. So we're going to deal with it. Also, I had not mentioned this, but we at the Progressive Radio Network, we have a new newsletter. And if you'd like all the information that we provide on a daily basis, which is a lot, 10 times more than what I can share on the air, you can sign up for it. It's free. So all you have to do to sign up for your new PRN newsletter, provide your email address to prnstudio@gmail.com. Again, prnstudio@gmail.com. Now for the latest on health and healing. A study published in the Journal of General Virology showed that curcumin can prevent transmission of the transmissible gastroenteritis virus, what is called the TGEV. It's an alpha group coronavirus that infects pigs from infecting cells. At higher doses, the compound was also found to kill virus particles. Now, I looked at how much they were offering, and it's relatively small. In fact, I've never offered anyone I've ever counseled that small a dose. So if they're getting good results with a very small dose, imagine what they could get if they had it at a higher dose, meaning over 1,000 milligrams. But turmeric or curcumin is extremely important. It is one of the 10 most powerful, all-inclusive healing herbs you can take into your body. That way we all should have it into our natural medicine cabinet, along with wild oregano oil and other nutrients like colloidal silver and bee propolis, etc. Now, infection with the TGEV causes a disease called transmissible gastroenteritis in animals and is characterized by diarrhea and severe dehydration and death. So the question is, how often when you eat pork, like bacon or sausage, bacon, it's all the same, comes from the same animal. But how do you know you're not getting a transmissible virus or bacterium or parasite? Because it's easy to infect pigs. And we don't even know at this time whether or not the bats were feeding off the blood of pigs, and then the pig became infected. And then people who ate or worked with the pigs also developed other conditions. That's still open for discussion. There's nothing absolutely 100% conclusive on it. But one of the reasons to be a vegan, and on a healthy vegan side, is you avoid all of the animal-based microorganisms that could really hurt you. So they found curcumin worked, and that's good. From Boston University comes a study from their University School of Public Health that 25% of all arthritis cases are linked to excess weight. Yes, weight loss from young adulthood to midlife was associated with sustainable reduction in your risk of developing arthritis. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Arthritis Care and Research. Now, we have no idea how many people actually suffer from arthritis because a lot of people simply take aspirin or some other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory or COX-2 inhibitor, and like ibuprofen, which, by the way, all these over-the-counter drugs kill thousands of people per year, mainly because of bleeding, but they just deal with the pain. Well, why not see what causes the pain? And if being overweight causes the pain, and in 25% of the cases, they're saying that's exactly what happens, because when you lose the weight, arthritis clears up, because weight creates cytokine storms, meaning a lot of pro-inflammatory agents are attacking your joints. So just something to consider. Reduce your body mass index, your body fat, your belly fat, and reduce your chance of suffering from arthritis. From Cornell University, in an article published in the Journal of Nutrition, comes a study about consuming blueberries in your diet. Because women who consume blueberries a cup a day for 6 weeks, it was able to alter the determinants of human muscle progenitor cell function. That's important because when you have a good diet and lots of blueberries or blueberry concentrate, you can affect the cells responsible for muscle growth and repair, especially if you do a lot of workout, meaning your post-workout recovery will increase. That's important. The study was conducted over 6 weeks, and it made a big difference. Now, the older you get, the more polyphenols you should have in your body, and the more antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. You get those from grapes, for example. So all your polyphenols from your fruits, and that means you're going to have better muscle recovery. And it's a, if you understand the science of it, it's a, it means that the muscle progenitor, meaning what creates the beginning of something, is a cell function through proliferation or cell number, and the capacity to manage oxidative stress and oxygen consumption rates or metabolism. Quite simply, if you had yourself after your workout a nice fruit juice with your nutrients that you need to recover from oxidative stress from the exercise, for example, vitamin C, L-carnitine, coenzyme Q10, cayenne, and magnesium. Now, that's not all of them, but that's in vitamin E. That's six really good ones for your heart and brain. And then you had something to help your muscles recover and protect them, like L-carnosine and PPQ, NAD, and pycnogenol. Oh, then you've protected your muscles and you've protected your heart and your brain and increased your circulation and thinned your blood, preventing stroke. You see, it's not complicated. And there's thousands and thousands of studies to support this. And always have a little protein after your workout within 20 minutes, because in the branched chain amino acids help rebuild your protoplasm so you get more muscle mass. Now, we're not talking about having gigantic muscles. We're just talking about not wasting away as a lot of people do, because muscle mass decreases 3 to 5% every decade after 30 years of age. And that's why the tone you had at 20, phenomenal. And what you had at 30, less so. And at 40, you know, it's really decreasing. You're starting to see the loss of muscle mass, the shoulders leaning forward, the neck craning forward, the loss of your ab muscles. All that increases. And then when you hit 60, you fall off a cliff. You really lose your muscles. So all the more reason, and you don't have to, all the more reason, you know, to really work your muscles every day. Now, I work out every day. I work out one day a week, what I call recovery workout. It's slow. It's easy. And it was interesting because when I was in an airport recently, a guy came up to me and he said, Gary, I saw your program on PBS recently. We chatted for a few moments. And I said, are you into health? And he said, I'm a doctor. I should be into more health than what I am. I certainly know more than what I'm applying. But when I saw you, and I saw you out there working out in the documentary, he said, I realize as long as Gary's not getting old and fat and weak, there's hope. And he just smiled and left. And I thought about that for a moment. That shouldn't we, you and me and everyone we know who's into health, shouldn't we realize that we have a responsibility to those in our life, not to push or cajole or, in any way shame them for not being healthy, but to be as healthy as we can be in case they ever get to that day, which they may or may not. In my family, it was not. I mean, not I mean, all my friends, oh, Gary, oh, there he is. We go into a restaurant, and Ron McCauley, one of my buddies, would say, hey, to the waitress, you got some rabbit food? We have a strange person here that won't eat the hamburgers. And they'd look at me like, no, we don't have that. But I would always, you know, be one step ahead because I'd eat before I'd go. So I could just enjoy their company and the mockery, which was nonstop. I mean, just, it's like a, I'm sure there are other places that have the same humor, but it's called a West Virginia humor. And that's why one of the things that really endeared me to the people of West Virginia is how they can laugh at themselves and everything else. Whereas a lot of people lose their sense of humor, and boy, that is a big negative. But in any case, I would look at people who never wanted to use me as an example. And to the contrary, very disdainful. All those health nuts. Yeah. Well, those health nuts and those little ladies in tennis shoes, those little ladies in tennis shoes didn't have deformed feet, didn't have fallen arches, and had the biochemistry that was 20 years younger than yours at the same age. So mock with caution, because your karma could be on the other side of that smiling back at you, and you don't want that. So just remember, when you exercise, when you build up your muscle mass, which you can, if it's decreasing tremendously, then you are allowing yourself to live a longer life. And blueberries are just one of those. And I started taking photographs of myself every 10 years, starting when I was 20. And I've done it every year. And people can see what I look like today because I have all these videos I just finished in the last 2 months, 53 videos. Oh, and by the way, we just found 49 full lectures that I did at 83rd Street over a three-month period when I got into this really creative state of mindset. And now we're editing them into full documentaries, and we'll be releasing them shortly. But do this. Take pictures of yourself in a bathing suit, and so that you can see what your body looks like, and then date it, and then just keep a calendar. You know, like a kid that goes up, remember, I'm sure that you all did the same thing. Your mom would put you against the wall and then mark a, pencil on the wall so you could see how you were growing. And let's see if in the next 6 months we can't change so you look younger. You look 10 years younger. Can you? You bet you can. And so that's why we all have a responsibility to be as healthy as we can, because we don't know who would say, well, you know, you don't look so good. You know, you're not healthy, so, you know, why should I work on it? Because there seems to be this sense of inevitability, this sense of, that, well, we're all waiting to die once we're past 40. We're on the backside of life. It's not true. Yes, we will all die, but I don't even think that will be the case within the next 10 years. I believe that new science of rejuvenation and regeneration, because I'm speaking directly with the top leaders in the entire world on this. Just had a conversation this morning. So I know what's coming. And there will be a day in the very near future where you'll be able to grow a new liver, unclog your brain. Not today, but it's coming. But there's a lot we can do to prevent that. Now, from University of Turin, which is in Italy, from the mitochondria, which is your energy factories, to a healthy aging, you have to look at the branched chain amino acids, because that is what helps you slow down the aging process. Because we have massive malnutrition in people as they age in the United States today and around the world. We're not living healthy lifestyles. You know, and that causes a high morbidity and mortality. Morbidity is disease, mortality is death. And in particular, protein malnutrition is one of the determinants of fragility in sarcopenia in elderly people. It's very common. So when you take in the branched chain amino acids, maybe take 5 tablets, you can help replenish the muscle mass, and that is important. In fact, in our latest study, we measured all muscle mass and showed people improving it tremendously. So you want stronger muscles, more energy, more ATP, adenosine triphosphate, more electron flux in peripheral blood mononuclear cells. Yeah, you can have all that, but you got to take in plant-based amino acids. That's how you get it. And a 20-year sedentary lifestyle, meaning you're lazy for 20 years. It's that simple. You're lazy. It's linked to twice the risk of premature death. So being physically active is the key to a longer life. This is from the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. Very important study. Twice as likely to die. And I was thinking about this morning when I was doing a workout. Interesting, because I went in to get my semi-annual skin check. I believe you should have your skin checked, your immune system checked on a semi-annual basis. It's not expensive, because a lot of us, myself included, I would have to be at the top of that list. When I was a teenager, just didn't care. I wanted to be out in the sun, so I would run for hours in the sun with no shirt on. And you pay a price for that. That was one of my stupid periods. And not my only one, but that was one. But fortunately, knowing how to repair the damage and how to prevent the damage, now I wear 50% blockage. So all my running outfits are 50% capable of blocking the sun, which is important. So no cancers, nothing wrong, just normal keratinized lesions. They freeze it off in a second, it's gone. But boy, a lot of people have skin cancer, and that's really bad, especially melanomas. In any case, my doctor had a heart attack, and yet he is fit. And we were talking about this morning. I said, if you chose to have me provide you protocol, that wouldn't have happened. And he said, well, my heart just stopped, electrical charge. I said, well, that's one of those situations where you're fit. Yes, biking every day that he did, but you weren't healthy. And we have to understand, we can be fit and not healthy. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone smoking cigars, eating crap. Very, very fit, outstanding physiques throughout their careers, but not healthy. Or healthy and not fit. You see a lot of this in the vegans. I mean, God. Boy, I'm glad, I remember we only had Carl Lewis. We only had a few vegans that were really buffed. They're kind of emaciated. On a normal day, they had to kind of walk with weights in their pockets. They get blown away. So now it's very normal to be fit and healthy, but then you got to be happy. So you got to put all that together, and then you got a chance of preventing death. Much more than if you're sedentary. So get your exercise. I'm suggesting 300 minutes a week. It's going to lower your blood pressure, your body mass index. It'll help you on all levels. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 23 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to, I have several comments here. And one deals, and I'll let Jesse tell us, I don't believe we've played this. If we have, we'll skip it on Forced to Fake Science. If we haven't played that, we'll play that. It's very good. Oh, no, we played it, so we're not going to play that. But we'll go to Millennials, Generation Z, trying to foster a workplace culture of victimhood. Have any of you owned businesses, or any of you who just work in businesses, have noticed in the last 5 years, instead of people coming to work and doing their work and socializing, and that everything is about what can make me angry today? What can I justify for not doing my work, or being just a victim? I'd like to hear your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And we got some requests. Once again, if you want our free PRN studio at gmail.com, that's prnstudio@gmail.com, our newsletter, just go there and we'll send it out to you. It's free and it's a lot of information. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
But to Ita Buttrose, she gave a speech to a conference in London, and she didn't think she was being quoted. But what's private these days? So having, I'll tut-tut that. But the fact is, she was then quoted in the papers saying this about younger workers. She said, "Today's younger workers, they need much more reassurance. They're keen on being thanked, and they almost need hugging. They seem to lack the resilience that I remember from my younger days." Now, I'm not sure whether she's talking about ABC staff, or which I suspect she was, or whether just speaking more generally. But to discuss this, I'm joined by Gemma Tognini, who's a columnist with The West Australian, and Fiona Scott, former Liberal MP and Government Relations Advisor. Gemma, I think you have employed the odd person or two, well, and the normal person or two over the years. Is this true that that younger workers are really vulnerable and probably need a cuddle?
Andrew, it is true. And I'll say, and I've been in business for 17 years and I've employed my fair share of millennials. And I would say, from what I read of that coverage today, it's accurate. Having said that, if I could say it this way, the good ones know it about themselves. They're self-aware and are willing to sort of have those babied edges sort of, you know, sharpened off them. You know, they're parented differently. I mean, it is a societal reality. And, you know, as an employer, when you're the one paying the bills, you get to set the culture. And I have been very fortunate to employ some incredibly talented people from that generation, the generation below mine, Andrew. But I will say this, the good ones, no other way to describe it, the good ones go, yeah, we're a bit soft. Yeah, we need a bit of a cuddle. You know, we joke about it. You don't get a participation medal for turning up and, shock horror, doing your job. I think what she said is true. It's acknowledged to be true because, Andrew, there is an entire industry that has been created around how to better engage with the emerging generations. And there's some truth to that. But bottom line is, I don't like the tail wagging the dog ever, and I certainly don't run my business that way. But, yeah, there is truth to it, for sure.
Look, you say there's an entire industry about how to manage communications. Fiona, the industry that I'm worried about is the industry of victim politics. Now, every boss is walking on eggshells now, you know, not just the usual sexual harassment, but microaggressions and people looking to feel offended, actually looking actively to be offended, and then, you know, promotion or attention or maybe a payout, something like that. So I'm wondering, are the young really that much more sensitive, or have we developed a sort of legal and employment structure to reward the whingers over the doers?
Yeah, look, that's a really interesting way of putting it, Andrew. And I think there are two separate factors here, and I think they do collide at points, but there's elements where they're really different. Absolutely, there's a culture of victimhood where everybody just almost wants to be offended because there might be a payday at the end of it. But when we look at younger generations, I mean, it's probably been the age-old adage that those of us, and I hate to say this, approaching middle age or in middle age, look down at the young and go,
nonsense,
oh, my gosh.
Nonsense, Fiona, nonsense. I feel that I've got to do the obligatory nonsense middle age.
You think of it, the war generation's beliefs of the baby boomers, the baby boomers' beliefs of Gen X, Gen X's views of Gen Y. Even if you go all the way back to the 1920s, the flappers, I mean, they were also the generation, the flappers, that had turned around and rocked on up through depressions and wars and all sorts of things. So, look, I wonder whether there's an element here that maybe as we hit that middle age and we're a bit older and more wise, we look down on the youth and say, if only you got off your butt and you did these sorts of things. So, look, I think there's two things colliding here, but the damaging one and the scary one is that the speed at which everybody wants to be offended, the speed at which everybody wants to mitigate someone else, and the fact that we're building a society which is, regardless of generation, about victimhood. Yeah. How I'm a victim because of what happened in previous generations. I'm a victim because something happened to my mother, my father, my dog, my goat.
Or my race, or my this, or my that, you know. There was someone in the Sydney Morning Herald saying she was really offended by MasterChef today, you know, because the final didn't have the funnel didn't have, it wasn't won by an Asian person. So, oh my God, I'm so offended, even though Asian people have won more of the MasterChef competitions than, I mean, people are so prone to offence. But the thing is, yeah. Gemma, there's a big change now, you know. This crisis, I reckon, has hit the young more than most. You know, a lot won't be getting a job for a long time. And if they do, it'll be a very insecure one. I think this will be such a cultural shift. I wonder how it's going to change people.
It's a really important question to ask. I weirdly had this conversation with someone the other day because I was explaining how when I graduated, and I don't care who knows how old I am, I just turned 47, and I don't care who knows it, Andrew, but I graduated university in 1993, and I was, you know, I remember expecting people to sort of fall over themselves to hire me because I've done very well in my degree and all that sort of stuff. But the reality of it was that journalism jobs are never thick and fast anyway, but 1994, it was tough, and I spent a bit of time working for free in newsrooms while I bussed tables in a restaurant and cleaned houses and did odd jobs and, you know, kept myself running, basically. And you know, I'm grateful for that time because it built character and it built resilience and an appreciation for the job that I did eventually get. And that the idea that we can progress without a process is just naive. And I do believe that those in that job-seeking age, as we emerge from this, will have a choice. They'll have a choice to either say, I'm going to let this make me, or I'm just going to, you know, sit in my garage and eat cereal out of a box in my knickers. I don't know. But we don't get to choose in life what happens to us. It's a cliche, but it's true. We get to choose.
We get to choose how we respond. I think we're in a big cultural turning point here, Fiona. I've been saying to my kids, and it's not just, you know, grumpy dad, you know, who's turned 60 and it's going to be, the world, you know. But I reckon, in fact, we've had it better than a lot of kids will now get it. Like, we could count on growth. We could count on buying a house that was reasonably affordable. Reason counted for something. Security there. Every year we got richer. None of that's happening now. No, I think kids are going to have it a lot tougher in the next decade or two, and I think there'll be a profound changing of things. And we won't be able to say, you know, we did it tough, we lived in a cardboard box, none like you. It's going to change.
Yeah, look, you're 100% right. And I think whilst we have a flaw in the economy of things like job seeker being elevated and, of course, job keeper as well, I don't think that you know what's coming. And I think that's probably the biggest fear. And really the fact that some of these attitudes of, you know, I can live my dream. Well, you can live your dream, but getting your dream is going to be a lot of hard work. But there are elements of the economy that there is a lot of redundancy. There's a lot of fat. There's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of green tape. There's a lot of, you know, this offended economy and society that is not actually driving our economy forward. For the last few years, under 28 years of perpetual growth, we haven't dealt with these issues. And I think this sort of shaking out is actually going to force us to be a leaner and smarter economy. It's going to force us, like tonight, working through Skype, rethink how we work, rethink how we use digital technology. I'm actually optimistic about the future of Australia. I know the debt is frightening. I know all of those aspects, but here in Australia, we are in the box seat to be able to springboard out of this and reshape the country we need to be. And I think if we can...
I would offer a different opinion. I think Australia is toast. It has had the worst environmental catastrophes in the world in the last 24 months. They had the worst fires, the worst droughts, the worst storms. They've run out of water for Sydney, their largest city. The smaller farms outside the cities are closing down. There's more bankruptcies. There's less natural resources. So it overdeveloped based upon its technologies, but not looking at its basic resources. That's true all over the world, by the way. And now we're paying the price for that. Unfettered growth. And that's all of your bankers, Wall Street, all your developers, and the people willing to pay any amount of money to be in that desired location. But I was thinking, wow, is there a consequence to this? And the answer is yes. Now it's coming due. So Australia would be the one country in the world that I would say as an entire country is dead, and it's not coming back to life. And by the way, I just we're setting up some kind of screening for the new film, Last Call for Tomorrow, which goes into this. And I filmed in Australia and other countries as well, showing you that what the people want to know, they will focus 100% of their attention on. What they don't want to know, they stay in intentional ignorance of. And so while they're building a beautiful house that's state-of-the-art in their opinion, because everything is smart, you don't have to do anything, everything's done for you, you just give a command and everything is done. Yeah, and what about your water? What about it? Well, your aquifers are empty. They can't be refilled. It's done. And they think, well, surely someone, no, everybody was paying attention to growth and nobody at what cost. Now, to the millennials and the Z generation, the Y generation, all generations, boy, have you missed it. Here's what you've missed. Here's what gets our preoccupation every day. Turn on CNN and the other dancing clown outfits and the New York Times, and all you get are screeds. You get no in-depth, legitimate intellectual discussion because they don't allow it. They're censoring everyone. Google censors, Facebook censors, Twitter censors. So when you're talking about that everything is about a woke society, what exactly, tell me, I'd like to know, what are you doing about rising homelessness? Oh, homelessness, not just in your city, but just 200 million new homeless just in the last few months in Africa alone. No place to go, but no capacity to survive if they stay where they're at. What about hydrofracking and fossil fuel firms? What about the biggest fossil fuel polluters? Nothing being done. How about opening the public lands to private interests for exploration, meaning destroying our public lands? Nothing's being done. How about resurrecting focus on going after elite greed and speculative trading? Nothing's being done. How about the corruption of the Federal Reserve? Nothing's done. The CDC and the FDA, totally controlled by Big Pharma and not acting on behalf of public health. Nothing's done. Political denialism of climate change or acknowledging climate change, but doing absolutely positively nothing about it, nor having the intellect to know what to do, even if you could do something. Nothing is done. How about nuclear power plants right now that should all be closed? Nothing's closing. Pipelines? Nothing. The military-industrial complex, overseas wars, regime changes, and aggressive foreign policies against sovereign nations? Nothing. The War on Terror, the Patriot Act, National Defense Authorization Act, these are all crippling our constitutional rights? Nothing. How about the escalation of nuclear weapons? Nothing. In fact, what we're putting into a new version of nuclear weapons, over $1 trillion, could de-ghettoize all of American cities. Not a penny to those cities. Everything for the nuclear industry. How about the all-pro-Israeli apartheid organizations and challenging them and challenge APEC? Nothing. How about right-wing xenophobia and religious lobbying? Nothing. Now, how about getting rid of all laws involving marijuana or other drugs? Nothing? No, state by state only, but then very specific, and only because it brings tax dollars to the state. Are you going to expunge every record of everyone who's ever been arrested for using drugs? You should. That's the moral thing to do. You won't do it. And both parties' national committees on repressive laws keeping out third parties. Who you should be voting for is your business, but do you even know the president of the Green Party? I'll bet you don't. I'll bet 99% of the people in this audience don't even know what the Green Party's principles are. I spoke with the Green Party. I wanted to know, what is your platform? And by the way, it was some of the so-called progressives, and they're not. They're regressive Democrats who are all into power and ego. They took some of the principles of the Green Party and captured it for themselves. How about protesting against the FCC and the NPR and PBS for its corporate takeovers using tax dollars from government? How about the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Trade Organization still continuing to bankrupt people? How about the change in our bankruptcy laws? How about the internet firms like breaking up Facebook, breaking up Google, who support 24/7 surveillance on you? How about the consolidation of the telecommunications firms and 5G release? Nothing's changed. How about the CIA and torture policy? Nothing's changed. How about the crimes against humanity and those responsible, like Barack Obama and Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton? Nothing. How about debt peonage? Nothing. Student loan relief? Not going to happen. How about against Obamacare as it sells out to the earlier single payer? We should have universal health care and could. Nobody's interested. How about the USDA and GMO policy, the DARK Act, which Obama promoted, but then was supported by Monsanto? Nothing. Now, those are just a handful of like maybe 35, 40 different topics. Not a single thing's being done as if those don't count. Well, let me tell you something. Global warming counts. All right. In the last 7 days, you had a hurricane up the eastern United States with deaths and destruction, power outage to hundreds of thousands of people, and you saw how vulnerable you were. And the Apple fire in California, now that's just in the last 7 days, and yet nothing being done. So you see, we can all get tied up in knots because our emotions are hurt. You know, someone did something that was a microaggression. We walked by an Italian restaurant and they said, smell that aroma. And I said, how dare you smell that garlic bread? Because that's cultural appropriation. God, even some idiot in Canada no longer will be called chief financial officer, CFO. Instead, it must be a different title because using the word chief is a microaggression against native culture. No, it is not. You don't even know the context in which that linguistic concept emerges. We're dealing with functional illiteracy at all levels. To take it one step further, and I'm interested to see your thought on this, because as far as we've gone in insanity, this is just the beginning. Wait till you see what happens when the power shifts completely in the House, Senate, and the White House, and then everything in your life changes for the worst. Because nothing is going to get done because they've all been captured by the deep state and the corporations and the oligarchs who control it. But why pay attention to things that really matter when we can engage in the trivia? So, something to think about, and I'm going to do a whole commentary on this for tomorrow. So now we're going to go to, and by the way, call in, share your points of view. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you. Now we're going to go to another clip. Now, this is important because this guy, I decided to read all of his writing. And I spent about 3 hours reading all of his writing. I didn't see anything offensive in anything. He was simply raising legitimate questions like meritocracy. And yet now it's gone. And by the way, if you're going to take meritocracy to its, you know, highest level, then this is the way it should work. And you should be lobbying for this immediately in the streets. No one can win at anything because that you're hurting someone's feeling. They deserve a trophy for showing up. Okay. No more winners in any competition. So you can't have accounting scores. If it's football or basketball, baseball, hockey, tennis, no winners, except everybody wins. And also, nobody can get A's, because that's a microaggression against someone, and that's racism because someone who got an F can't have that. So no grading. The whole basis of testing is based upon meritocracy, and that's racist, so no more testing. The idea of teaching a book that may have something in it that might challenge the person, no more testing with books, no more teaching with books. You should have every class in every university only having open forums where people have an opportunity to come in and share their grievances. And for that, you give them a degree. You give everybody a degree, but it has to be the same degree. Now that's what no meritocracy means. Think about that. It's what they leave out of their arguments. That if you had good debates, you could show that. Right now, you don't show that. And then we have the fear culture. People know the truth but are afraid of saying it. This is a person, you're going to hear now, who had nothing in his background, as you'll hear him. And yet he has been a victim of the lack of meritocracy to get into a high school, get into school. And then you see on the screen, you won't be able to see it, but you roll down dozens and dozens and dozens of applications he put into all the different places to give a chance to work. And it turned out that he's like a genius when it comes to creating a different program. He's one of the best in the world. And Google saw this and they hired him. He was an intern. But then he decided one day to simply question, just a question in an open dialogue about what happens when you're striving so hard for inclusiveness that you exclude people. And he gives examples that actually are against federal law that was brought into law in order so there wouldn't be segregation any longer and racism. So the very laws that they're now that exist to protect people against discrimination are being completely swept aside in a form of segregation. Wow. And so then they decided to go after him. First it was a few, then it was thousands, then hundreds of thousands, then millions. Instantaneously, his life is gone, his wife gone, his job gone, and you'll hear him say he'll never write another thing. He will go like everyone else and put his head down because he saw what happens when he tried to speak the truth. All right, let's hear from him now.
Welcome back. The cancel culture has finally caught up to me, and it may be necessary for me to just shut my mouth by this point because my whole entire physical existence may be at stake here. Let me show you what people have been up to on Twitter. They've been having this whole festival about me, really. And so what they're referring to is on Twitter, somebody reshared one of my videos about Black Lives Matter and me kind of questioning some of the narrative around it and just really having a discussion about it. And apparently this has 930,000 views, 8,000 retweets, and then people are pretty much coming after me like the mob. And, you know, as I've mentioned, even in the original video, there's not much of a coherent discussion here. If we take a look at some of the tweets that are going on here, somebody here says, "Where's cancel culture when you need it? People want me to be canceled." If we go to the next one, they're demanding for me to be demoted, as a reference to James Damore, who was fired from Google. I mean, imagine if I was still working a job, just simply for me to express my opinions, my viewpoints, bringing my whole self to work, so to speak, I could be fired for that. I mean, how's that fair when other people can come in and express their liberal viewpoints, and then I'm coming in, it's a very neutral viewpoint, actually. I don't even classify myself as political, conservative, or Republican. I'm just here questioning some ideas, bringing my own free thinking into this, and I could be fired for all of this. You can see someone here saying, "Oh, this trash tyke." Someone else here says, "He doesn't have the right to say this. I don't have the right to speak. You just want to silence me because it sounds like you want to censor people here now, right? Like this is blocking out free speech simply through mob rule. That does not sound very fair to me." I think what's disturbing is some of these arguments are actually racist in and of themselves, right? Someone here says, "These Asian dudes are clowns, Asian piehole, Asian men are simps," and overall a lot of swearing. Now, I may be mistaken, but these sound like very racially charged slurs to me, simply referring to me by my race. And you can even see here somebody says, "This video is a future Asian uncle at the BBQ you don't want to talk to." What does this have to do with Asians at all, right? Why can't you just look at me as a person? Why do you have to bring my race into it and try to categorize me in some way, try to stereotype me? And personally, I've read through hundreds of the responses out there, of which there are thousands, and there hasn't been a single rational, logical counter-argument to any of the points I've made. All of the responses have just been personal attacks, if not racially charged personal attacks. And so let me show you where things get a little bit dangerous and dicey here, if not a little bit ironic, which is that somebody here says, "Urge to dox rising." And so this is cancel culture at its finest, where people start asking, "Who is he? Who is this guy? What's his name?" And then people are more than happy to respond and start doxing. You can see people are starting to reveal my real name here. And then there's another person here asking, "What's this person's name? When was this filmed?" And people are more than happy to provide the answer. And then another one, "His name, someone." And the response, "Found it, Patrick Hsu." And so you see, this is how cancel culture works. Maybe you raise an idea, you want to have a discussion out there, and then the mob comes after you, identifies you personally, comes after you with personal attacks, and really goes after your entire livelihood as well. And this is where things get dangerous, because the response here is, "I don't usually hate people, but my need to see someone inflict some kind of pain onto this man is unnaturally high." And so you see, this is actually starting to incite violence. And if this person had more influence, perhaps her followers would say, okay, let me help this person out. Let me come after this guy and inflict some type of pain onto this person. And so if we go through some of these other tweets, there are some overall ideas around here. One is, there's zero space for dissent in the BLM movement. They resort to intimidation and bullying if you disagree in the slightest. And I think that overall captured this whole entire Twitter debate, if you can even call it a debate, because most of it was name-calling and social shaming. And what's also disturbing, and I'm not sure if this is part of their strategy, is that very few of these tweets even mentioned me. People didn't want me to know that they were talking about me. And what people will do is they'll even block you so you can't see what they're posting, and then they'll talk behind your back, which seems to be a really disgusting thing to do if you're just going to talk about someone and you don't even want to hear what they have to say. You don't want to have a debate. You don't want them to respond. You don't even want them to see what you're posting about them. You just want to trash talk other people. That does not sound like a healthy conversation to me. And then someone here is actually asking the right questions. Did anyone actually take the time to debunk what he said, or is everyone just going to say he's racist and move on? How is he wrong? Aren't Hispanics being discriminated against? And yeah, Hispanics probably are being discriminated against. A lot of people are being discriminated against, and this is the discussion, the broader discussion that I wanted to talk about more. However, because of cancel culture, it seems that people don't even want a debate. If you try to have a debate, it's not even going to be a safe time to do it. You can see someone says, I don't think anyone in Silicon Valley will hire him anymore. Now, thankfully for me, either way, I'll be fine. But just imagine if a normal person were out there just trying to have a debate, a discussion. And if a normal person had their livelihood potentially ruined in this way and not being hireable anymore, I mean, that could be devastating to a normal person out there. Now, the type of debate I would have preferred would be one about the actual topic and not about me as an individual and trying to cancel me or silence me, because at the end of the day, I'm just a single person. And the ideas, the concerns and questions I had posed still remain out there, unanswered in the minds of so many other people. Overall, though, at this point, I've decided to back off from talking about politics because...
Okay, that's just one person that the mob, over a million people, decide to destroy without knowing anything about him. I read his work. His work is reasonable and his arguments are legitimate. So now we cannot pose a question because it will run against the preconceived self-righteous indignation emotions of people who believe that they are right and you are wrong, and because you're wrong, you're either a racist or you should be destroyed. Now, mind you, think of the people right now whose lives have been destroyed or substantially altered, like a Deepak Chopra or Rupert Sheldrake or Cheryl Atkinson. They're still working, but not like they were. The forms are not available to them that once were. And there are thousands more like that because Wikipedia has decided to dock all of them. Now, we're fighting back. And by the way, even this morning, I can't tell you what it's about, but some Nobel Prize winners have joined our cause. That's all I'll say. I intend to have everything ready to share with you about the first two efforts we've made out of five. And this is all going to litigation. And we have a whole team of lawyers. I mean, a big team. You ought to see them. And some of the best constitutional lawyers in the world. So, but we're approaching it very systematically. But we have the resources to do that. What about the people who don't? What about the people that don't have people that, you know, that can help them open the door, get a job? You know, they shame you and your life is done. How many people are going to commit suicide? Remember, they were wrong. The establishment, that's who's behind this, by the way. The establishment's always behind it. Look who's playing you. Who is behind everything on Russia? The establishment, using the idiot Democrats, and they could have used, and have the Republicans, are both idiots, in my opinion, and sociopaths. But we were right about a healthy vegan diet. They were wrong about supporting a meat-based diet. Deadly wrong. Millions of people died. We were right about preventing cancer. They were wrong in how they treated cancer. We were right about organic. They were wrong about supporting a genetically engineered. We were right about ambassadors of peace. They were wrong about 40 million people. No, excuse me, 20 million people have died because of American intervention since the end of World War II. We were right about not going to Vietnam. We were right about not going into Afghanistan. We were right about not dealing with Saudi Arabia. We were right about nature and building safe environments for nature to thrive, would be national parks, and planting hundreds of billions of trees and cleaning up our water. We were right. They were wrong on every single thing. They haven't been right on one single thing yet. They have all the power and we have none. That's the danger of cancel culture. When everything that is done right is considered wrong. That is your ultimate Orwell. Now, for a lot of our stations, we're out of time for you. However, for PRN, we're going to go to the next 5 minutes because I'm going to speak with Peter from Tampa and then Howie from Forest Hill. Peter from Tampa, you're on. Your thoughts, please.
Hi, Gary. You know, you're talking here. Let me set up an archetype. We talk about balance of power, but what about balance of power, knowledge, and interest? You help us all with knowledge. We all have acute interest, but we don't have power. And so when I'm evaluating everything you say in terms of knowledge, power, and interest, and it's obviously lopsided. They have the power. We may have knowledge and huge interest, but we don't have the power.
Hold on. Hold on a second. You've made some very important points, Peter. Let me see if you can see the reasonableness in my approach. They have power because we have not used free choice. When you wake up each day, you can choose to exercise or not. You can choose to keep your body lean and strong or not. You can choose to have a healthy diet or a sick diet. You can choose to watch their media and be propagandized to your, you know, just one of their automatons and a part of the mindless mob, or you can be a critical thinker, independent in your views. You can choose to respect the history of the wise woman and wise man that led the families, that led the culture, and share the uniqueness of their culture and the wisdom to help people through their crisis, or you can be a lonely person hanging out and taking Zoloft and feeling like a victim. You see, you have far more power over your own personal life than what you've given yourself the opportunity to realize, and they have less power until you abrogate your power. So they only have power because you give it to them. When you and I and tens of millions of others stop playing their game, we no longer can be controlled as if we have been up to this point. Remember, my mother smoked, my father smoked, everyone in my family smoked. I was the only one who didn't. They all died young, and yet they still refused to challenge their doctor because the doctor died young, and he smoked, and he drank. That is how complete the Edward Bernays, the father of all psychology, all propagandizing and advertising, gave the tools to industry, the tobacco industry, the milk industry. Remember the celebrities, you know, wear your mustache, white mustache, and drink cow's milk. So everything that's wrong has been because we've accepted their rightness. I say challenge all authority figures until you independently can prove that they have your interest, not their own, at stake. Then you take back the power. Then they have no power. And that's what we want. I appreciate your call. Does that make sense to you, Peter? Oh, he hung up. Okay. Howie from Forest Hills, you're the last caller. Hi, Howie. You're on.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. One thing, though, I would say, and I agree with 90% of what you say on the air. The only thing is that if we look at nature, we are coming to a point where, as much as we would like to avoid some type of violence, it's inevitable for something to change because, like you just pointed out, people are exercising their free will in the small battles to avoid that violence. I mean, you look at nature, forest fires happen, natural disasters, then the new wave happens and the cycle of life continues. And we're approaching that in society with our not using the arguments, and even I would even go so far as to say maybe even a fist fight or two to get a point across, because at some point you're going to have to oppose someone else's will who has the wrong idea because they're imposing their will upon everyone else. I'll let you comment about that.
Thank you. I appreciate you. You've made several good points. First, I believe that you're absolutely correct. If we do not deal with nature in a peaceful way, nature will deal with us as it unleashes itself because of the imbalances that we created. So we get the whirlwind back, whether it's a house because it burns down in California because we chose to move in the wrong place and then stay there against all of the common sense reasons in science. And whether we live on the ocean and suddenly our houses are washed away, as they're all going to be up and down the East Coast, starting with Florida, and yet more people are moving to the coast in Florida, and that either shows a collective amnesia or an intentional neglect. Either way, nature will not be kind when it throws itself at you. But you can find other places in the United States to be. And finally, I don't believe in fistfights resolving anything except some unrequited frustration that never results in anything constructive. Instead, I believe that what we have to do with some sense of maturity is sit down and listen to the best solutions to all of our common problems. Everything I mentioned earlier is a common problem. The pollution of our water, the pollution of our food, the pollution of our soil, the pollution of our air. Those are for all of us, rich or poor. And tomorrow, if someone reminds me, Jesse, if you remind me, I'll do a commentary about the 3.6 million wealthy people in the United States moving to bunkers. I mean, already, they bought them. I think that is the dumbest thing a person could do, but I'll explain why that's dumb tomorrow. And in fact, one of those people who I know personally, I let him know why it was a foolish thing. He said, I'd never thought about that. I said, yep, well, when you got a lot of money and not a lot of common sense, you make bad choices, and we see that all the time. So can we resolve issues? The only time that we cannot resolve an issue is when they come for us. And when's that going to happen? Within about 3 to 6 months after the election, I believe that all the, not the peaceful demonstrations, but the agent provocateurs will have unbridled access to do whatever they want because the media is covered for them and the government is covering for them. And they're just peaceful demonstrators. No, there are peaceful demonstrators. The majority are. But then there are absolute criminals in there. And they know that they will not be arrested. They will not be charged. If they are arrested, they'll be released. But they're going to take some damage into people. And there's where I see that you have every right to stand up. And why do you think you haven't seen any of these agitators going into a biker's bar or going into a VFW or going down to Texas? You go down to Texas and you start acting out, you'll get your ass handed to you if you step on someone's property. So yes, there will be a moment where there'll be a pushback, but you're not talking about a few people or a few thousand or a few hundred thousand or a few million. You're talking about 200 million people are waiting in outrage at what they see is the destruction of the best of our society because of the worst of a small number of human beings. And that's when everyone's attention will be galvanized. I wish it were otherwise, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think that's going to be wrong. I think that's what we're facing. I really appreciate, Howie, I appreciate your call. Very well thought out. Thank you very much. For all of you, thank you for watching, or excuse me, listening. And now, Utrice Lead, who takes a baton in this marathon of sharing the best that we can give you on Progressive Radio Network. Have a nice day, everyone.